We're in chapter 2 of James. My brethren, do not hold your faith in our glorious Lord Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism. For if a man comes into your assembly with a gold ring and dressed in fine clothes, and there also comes in a poor man in dirty clothes, and you pay special attention to the one who is wearing the fine clothes and say, "You sit here in a good place," and you say to the poor man, "You stand over there or sit down by my footstool," have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil motives? Listen, my beloved brethren, did not God choose the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom, which he promised to those who love him? But you have dishonored the poor man. Is it not the rich who oppose you and personally drag you into court? Do they not blaspheme the fair name by which you have been called? If, however, you are fulfilling the royal law according to the Scripture, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself," you are doing well. But if you show partiality, you are committing sin and are convicted by the law as transgressors. For whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles in one point, he has become guilty of all. For he who said, "Do not commit adultery," also said, "Do not commit murder." Now, if you do not commit adultery, but you do commit murder, you have become a transgressor of the law. So speak and act as those who are to be judged by the law of liberty. For judgment will be merciless to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Well, the section starts off with a directive. He's addressed to the brethren, so we'd take this that he's, speaking fondly and, on a fond term to fellow believers. He says, do not hold your faith in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism. The reference to faith here, I don't think is, it's not like your content of your faith. This would be in the sense of, but it's not so much in your personal faith, like it's focusing on that, salvation faith, but that general sense of that we're related to God through faith, a figure of speech of referring to that we are believers, that we have this commonality, that a way of describing the walk with Christ, salvation as such. Don't hold the faith, and then it gets to points that it's in, the faith is not just faith in something, but it's directed toward Christ, with an attitude of personal favoritism. Elsewhere that word is translated, the few times it's used as partiality. Some sense of showing favor, some sense of, being partial. So that's the directive. By itself, we'd have to wonder what that meant, maybe. How do you hold your faith in such a way that it has personal favoritism? But he goes on to give us an example. I don't think it's so much an example. He looks at the circumstances that are facing these Christians. Becomes an example for us, perhaps. If a man comes into your assembly with a gold ring and is dressed in fine clothes, however, there's another man that's poor, so no ring on his finger, and the ring, obviously an expensive ring, but then representing more than just a ring, the very fact that he had a ring like that would indicate other wealth. And here's a man that's poor and also in dirty clothes, and you pay special attention to the one who is wearing the fine clothes. So you say to him, "Here, come sit in the best chairs." And you say to the other one, "Go over in the corner."
I got kicked because I'm sitting in the nice chair.
Oh, did you bring it up?
Yeah,
trying it out. There you go. Yeah.
Anybody
could
have had it.
But the clothes are the other way.
Even
the
one.
It's
So the other one you say, just go over there, or say sit, you know, down on the floor here. You don't even get a chair. So that's kind of their setting. You know, when you do that, that's the favoritism. So when he's talking about favoritism, the favoritism here in specific what he's looking at, though we could look at, you know, applications, it has to do with wealth. You know, the prestige, the power, that's associated with the wealth. So when one treats the wealthy in a way that puts them up here and the poor, you don't have anything to offer, so you're down there. That's what he's looking at. And now, you know, we'll come back to that and talk about, you know, ways that we could, you know, what we might see as applications for it also. Then he moves from there and makes a logical appeal. Or excuse me, I didn't finish verse 4. Should have been a part of that too. It says, when you do that, you have not made have you not made distinctions among yourselves, and you become a judges with evil motives. So you've made these distinctions. You made the judgment. You're worthy. You're not worthy. And James definitely sees that as that judgment. You know, he brands it with evil motives. Your motives are not good. He makes this logical appeal, and the next three verses says, listen, my blood, brethren, did not God choose the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he promised to those who love him? So you look at that, you know, did God not choose the poor to be rich in faith, to be heirs of a kingdom? But you have dishonored the poor man. Is it not the rich who oppress you and personally drag you into court? Do they not blaspheme the fair name by which you have been called? So, seems to be, we would assume here, though it may have been largely true, you know, somewhat of a stereotype of saying, you know, the rich, you know, haven't they been the ones that are oppressing? A little harder for us to relate to in a society that has a large middle class. Here, there's you're poor, you're rich. There's no, you know, not much in between. And often rich were known for taking advantage. And so that's what it's looking at. But yet, if the rich are known for even taking advantage of people, and, you know, if you didn't, kind of like the Ebenezer Scrooge, it's, if you haven't paid your rent, then I'm getting your house. And yet there's that part of, yeah, but if he's here, either what could that do for us, or how honored we are that he's here. And so that treating him, you know, differently, moves from there to a theological appeal. Says, if, however, you are fulfilling the royal law according to the Scripture, and so this statement that Jesus talked about as the great commandment, you know, he puts it as the royal law, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, you are doing well. But if you show partiality, you are committing sin and are convicted by the law as transgressors. For whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles in one point, he has become guilty of all. For he who said, do not commit adultery, also said, do not commit murder. Now, if you do not commit adultery, but you do commit murder, you have become a transgressor of the law. The first part is real easy to follow. Verse 8, you know, if you're fulfilling the royal law, loving your neighbor yourself, you know, that's doing good. And then verse 9, if you show partiality, you're committing sin. Okay, we can take that as a, you know, just as a blanket statement. James said it, therefore it's true. But his explanation gets a little difficult when he says, for whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles in one point has become guilty of all. If he left it there, we could take it. But the explanation is hard, because he who said, do not commit adultery, okay, so most of you haven't committed adultery. However, if you committed murder, as though there's a whole bunch more out there that have committed murder. So that seems to be a little awkward. But if we go back and pick up on how Jesus understood the law, that it wasn't to be understood in a rigid sense, that the actual cutting off somebody's head was the murder, the actual stopping the heartbeat was the murder, but even the hatred that led up to it was the murder. In the same way that he would explain that with adultery, then we see this becomes broader, because there becomes, with this murder, a sense of disdain for others, which is exactly what this is at. You know, we don't have regard for the poor. Maybe not so much that we're, angry at them, but it becomes, in that regard, I think. But his basic point being, if you fail at one point of the law, you failed at all of them, and if we fail at, as treating people in a proper way, then we have failed at the whole law. Not that the law, keeping the law, is the issue, but the association of it as sin, defining that action is sin. And then he gives a concluding directive. So speak and act as those who are to be judged by the law of liberty. For judgment will be merciless to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. Well, the law of liberty, is not something that, that he takes a great deal to define here. Back in chapter 25, he talked about, chapter 1, verse 25, says, but the one who looks intently at the perfect law, the law of liberty, and abides by it, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man will be blessed in what he does. Earlier he talked about being doers of the word. There, the whole thing seems, to be associated with, as we'd, simply describe it as the Bible. So the law of liberty here, within the context, would have every indication that it's pointing to God's word. And so he's not specifically going back and talking about we're under the law, but here it's the focus being on grace, the law of liberty. But yet, even there, if we're saved by grace, then there should be a response of grace on our part. Well, if we go back and look at this by the example or the setting in verses 2 and 3, where he talks about the circumstances here, 2 through 4, well, actually 2 and 3, about the rich and the poor, I guess we could have some, that could be an application. Or that could be a reality. I don't know that we encounter that a great deal. Those kind of extremes, because, like I said, because of kind of the middle class. Though you definitely could come across it. But what would be some other applications that we might come across? Where it, that we could really show, it's very possible to see partiality shown, or theoretically could be shown in a church.
The most impactful in my life has been cliques within the leadership, and the favoritism toward specific people within that clique can tear apart a church.
So how one, that either one is in power or whatever it was that put them in power, which could be from certain families or certain occupations or You know, in some churches, you know, a lot of churches divide. You know, I mean, it's like a lot of other things. I mean, it's not so much that anybody set out to start a church that way because they're in, you know, neighborhoods or, you know, I mean, there's a geographical setting for a lot of churches. And so because of its setting, maybe, you know, the people that go to that church are, you know, blue-collar workers or white-collar, you know, you tend to get into some things. So it's not so much that anybody went out and tried to start a church saying, you know, this is all the only one we want there. It's just that's the kinds, you know, the jobs that the people have that live in those neighborhoods, per se. But you can get that, and that, it, you know, so you have a church, and people work, you know, have a certain kind of jobs, you know, let's say they're all blue collars, and so they, you know, they have leadership, they, you know, run a very nice church, you know, if you can put it that way, you know, but I mean, you know, everything is nice, you know, I mean, they're serving the Lord, they're building disciples, it's a positive church. Then you go over, you know, across town, and it's a white-collar neighborhood. And they have, you know, it's the same kind of thing. But what happens if there's a church kind of in the middle where it starts pulling, you know, could the blue-collar worker be a, you know, a leader in that church? And those become interesting. You know, if it's from a sense of partiality, you know, like, no, you can't be this because you're not this, then we see we fall into this. So those are some, you know, there are different ways that, you know, could happen. Let's see, what else might there be? Race would be would appear not to be much of an issue here since of the group who's writing to. But yeah, race definitely would be an application.
You can see it with talents and spiritual gifts.
We had a couple in Brenham. They came into the church and they rode up on their motorcycle and they had all their leather on. I mean, not that we knew it, they rode up on their motorcycle when they walked down the building, but you can figure it out pretty quickly because they come in and they're dressed in, you know, leather from head to toe and got their helmets probably with them. And later it was, you know, they disclosed that, you know, they did that on purpose to see, you know, they had a ministry to bikers. Now, their history wasn't bikers and they didn't actually fit any stereotype of what you think bikers were. He was retired from an IBM or something, but that was their ministry. And so they came in that, in all their, you know, leather stuff to see how they'd be received. And, you know, yeah, you know, that's basically what it was. And I think they were kind of surprised that, you know, they were, you know, there wasn't that sense. But you can get it, you know, so you can get into partiality on those other prejudices that you can have. We were in, it's been several years ago, we were in somewhere in Colorado, I forgot where it is, Mount Crested Butte. And we were there for a couple of weeks on vacation and went to church, this little Bible church in town. And I remember there was this guy down front that was playing a musical instrument or something, and he had like a Mickey Mouse shirt on or something, you know, long hair and a Mickey Mouse shirt on. And just kind of, it's so easy to form images, you know, and decide something. And you know, and I can't remember, it's been too long, I can't remember it all, but I remember the general thing there, and then, you know, something later, you know, when you're sharing something, and, you know, it's so easy to say, well, I don't, you know, that's not what it should be, or this isn't, you know, you ought to do this, as opposed to, you know, being excited that maybe somebody came to the Lord, and, you know, you just don't know. I mean, you know, I mean, not necessarily that if he'd been a believer, you know, more than 2 weeks, he should have changed his image. But the very fact, if that's who he was 10 years ago and he came to the Lord, it, you know, so it's real easy to get into your little images, you know, your prejudices, without it being grounded on much. And then, you know, what he ends up here saying, when you do that, verse 4, then you've made distinctives among yourselves. You know, you've become a judge, but here the judge, you know, it's with an evil motive. And so it's not just so much that you've been judgmental, but here you've favored one, and you're talking about coming into the church, being received in the church. You put one in a place of honor, and the other one you've kind of, neglected. And that's what it's looking at. I think this would probably be people coming in that weren't, you know, new. That's the way I would take it, because it's, you know, especially with the rich, because he uses the general classification of rich as they're the ones that have opposed you. And I think if we went to Timothy, first when Paul writes to Timothy, it's very clear that there's nothing wrong with being rich. Paul, exhorts Timothy to remind and to teach the rich that they need to be careful and not trust in their riches. You know, that's their downfall, is they'll trust in the riches. But it wasn't, you know, there's nothing wrong with being rich per se. But I think, you know, James is looking at it that, you know, when somebody comes in and so everybody gushes over them because they're rich, you know, for either what it can do for them, or that they're impressed that, you know, a rich person's here, you know, we want him to think good of us. You forget that, hey, the rich in this society are the ones that are opposing you, you know, the one that are oppressing you, not the poor guy. I don't know, and maybe in our society, one, if you're going to think of it, you know, almost could be, famous and not famous. Of course, the not famous would be almost all of us, but, the famous, how they get treated with such, you know, privilege at places. And I don't know that, I mean, you could argue there's a certain sense of respect that would be shown, and I would think that's true. I mean, if somebody of some, you know, if we were a denomination, you know, with a hierarchy, if the bishop came in, you would show a respect to that him that you wouldn't show other, because there's that respect for office. Or if a political, you know, offices came in, there would be an appropriate respect, if you're in a courtroom, to have a certain respect for a judge. That's not the setting. I mean, I think, you know, you could show respect for people, but that's not the same as, you know, showing the favoritism that he's talking about here. Here you're saying, you know, we favor you and you get over there, you know.
It appears that this gathering that they're talking about is a gathering of believers.
Yes.
That the rich man and the poor man are both believers.
Yeah, and they've come to it for somehow. Yeah, either... And you know, it's a little hard to know, you know, whether, you know, they are believers, a part of the group, or whether they're kind of coming into the group, but yet, you know, we don't know exactly how that worked. I mean, there seems to be at times some other indicators that, you know, because of repercussions, you didn't just automatically get in, you know, to the group, but. But either way, it's still that sense of showing partiality, and I think you have to be careful there. You know, there might be some applications one could be careful, though I think you can go too far either way. But you know, when people give gifts to a church that has their name on it, you know, to say you're never going to do that, I don't know if that's solves anything or is a good thing. But you can also be at places where everything has a name on it, and it's kind of, you know, back into this honoring those that no, not necessarily, but I'm just saying it could be a lot of them. But I, you know, it's almost like, you know, we you know, those of us that have money, we own the church or we provided it, you know, and then it becomes, this is our pew, why are you sitting there, you know? Yeah. But I don't know that it's, I don't know that you know, go to the point where you never could, you know, recognize that somebody gave something. You don't have a plaques on something. So I don't know that I'd ever want to say that you could, you know, that it's wrong to put plaques on something or to give, you know, have something out there. I don't know that I'd necessarily be in favor of doing it. I just don't know that I could say it's wrong to do it. But I've also been in places where it was just kind of everywhere, and that kind of go. I think that's giving a message to people that have something and people that don't have something.
I've been in a church that had a prayer closet that had some of these things. and letters to the Corinthians, you know, we have an issue that comes up, and we can kind of conclude that, yeah, this is something specific that was going on in that church that Paul was addressing. Do we have any idea, you know, and partly this is kind of a general letter, you know, even to the 12 tribes.
Right.
You know, do we have any evidence that, say, the 12 tribes were doing this thing?
It doesn't seem to be, I mean, it seems to be like in Corinthians that it's not an illustration. Because, I mean, later James gives things that are very clearly illustrations, and this one doesn't seem to be
I think
illustration. Yeah. Because it's very specific. You know, so I think if it was an illustration, you'd come up with something probably a little more generic. Paul's was very specific. I mean, the partiality became that people were, you know, these are the cliques, you know. You know, Joe baptized me, and I'm a Joe follower. You know, David had baptized me, I'm a David follower. You know, it's just everybody was, you know, I mean, it was very cliquish. You know, the partiality was with cliques there, among other things. But yeah, so I think you know, you can come up with illustrations or talk about, but just in general, it's saying when we show partiality, then we're wrong. Now, do we show partiality? You know, we see if you say it just outright as a statement, do we show partiality? Yeah, we show partiality. You know, there's no way not to show partiality in some sense. You know, if all the kids, you know, go up on the platform and recite their verses, I mean, there's some kid that's cuter than everybody else, or three kids that are cuter than them. I mean, it's just the way it is. The next time, it may be the other way around. It may be somebody else, but I mean, you know, or there's somebody, if you teach a class, or somebody that you enjoy more than another, you know, that's your, you know, the teacher's pet. You know, so I mean, there's some sense of favoritism that's always there at some level. But that's not what this is talking about at all. I mean, it's favoring someone and discarding somebody. You know, it's not, you know, it's treating someone as though they are someone important, and somebody else, you're making sure they understand that they are nothing. And there's a big difference. I worked at in seminary. I didn't do it a whole lot, but I did it a little bit. There was a security company that I worked for, and they not only did the, you know, like security, you know, I mean, whatever you are, security officer, whatever these guys are, and I didn't ever do any of that, but they, because of those positions, they had other, you know, aware of other things needed. So there was this high-rise condominiums or whatever you'd call it, you know, that I was a doorman, basically. And I did that a few weekends and stuff. And the, you know, they'd pull up and they honk their horn in the back and you go get their groceries and you carry it up to their room for them, this kind of stuff, you know. And I remember this one in particular, the the daughter, as a married daughter, or I assume she's married, but, she was about my age. I'm, in 30s at that time. Anyway, there's two elevators. There's the elevators for the residents, and then there's the elevator, for the staff, So you go out and get her groceries, but you take a different elevator up. And then you get there, and then you take it in, Well, anyway, her daughter started talking to me, and it was very clear from Mom that was not appropriate. And that's when you want to say, listen, lady, I'm working on my master's. And, and I'm not saying that her reaction or her, she's paying money to live there and to have that service, but I'm just saying that's partiality. And when you bring that into a church, you're not good enough for this, and you're not, you're good enough and you're not. That's where it becomes those kind of issues. And any other thoughts or insights, questions?
Well, it kind of seems to me that it's saying you got to make everyone feel special.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, everybody's special. If you don't, you're like an adulterer or a murderer. it seems kind of like harsh judgment for someone who says you shouldn't judge harshly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it seems like you could make the mistake of treating everyone poorly and say you're free of it.
Oh, well, yeah. Because it talks about the royal law, yeah. But, love your neighbor as yourself, so, yeah. So, it brings in the standard. And I don't know that we would often, would think of that as, becoming the standard. But it was clear with Jesus that, he set that down as the standard. Basically, all other laws fall under how you relate to God and how you relate to people. Everything is under that. So.